The content found on thebestdayever.com from David Wolf and New Horizon Health, Inc. is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as treatment cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be construed as such because that would be illegal. Always work with a qualified health professional before making any changes to your diet, supplement use, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. Please understand that you assume all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.
And Dr. Davis, celiac disease is on unprecedented levels of increase. It's just everyone you meet has some kind of intolerance or celiac disease. It's now more common than it's ever been before. Can you talk about some of these autoimmune type related conditions, celiac and any others that come to mind?
Sure. So in case your listeners don't know this, 1% of the American population has celiac disease. That is destruction of the small intestine from the, people say, the gluten protein. It's actually the gliadin protein in wheat, rye, and barley, because the gluten structure in rye and barley is virtually identical to the structure in wheat. So this is a very devastating condition. Critics of my message say, well, you know, we all understand that 1% of the population has wheat and everybody from gluten, and everybody else can have wheat, gluten, be safe. What they're doing wrong with that kind of thinking is they're regarding wheat as nothing more than a vehicle for gluten that causes celiac disease. And as we've talked about, there's many other things in modern wheat besides gluten. There's the gliadin protein that causes abnormal bowel permeability in people without celiac disease or gluten sensitivity. There's the opiate effect that stimulates appetite in everybody, whether or not you have celiac disease. And by the way, it even does that in celiac disease. That's why we have obese celiac people now. There's the wheat germ agglutinin. That's a direct bowel toxin, blocks that cholecystokinin hormone, and blocks leptin, and doesn't have to have celiac disease to do that. Blood sugars go high from the amylopectin A of wheat. Does not require celiac disease to do that. So celiac disease obliges someone to be absolutely meticulous wheat and gluten free, but it doesn't mean that there aren't other things in modern wheat that are deleterious for people without celiac disease.
And you had a really interesting take on people with celiac or other type of conditions that force them to go very strictly gluten-free, because a lot of the gluten-free options out there are as bad as or even worse than the original gluten-containing item. When people try to go gluten-free, the gluten-free options that food manufacturers produce out there can be just as bad or even worse.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. So whenever we rely on the food industry to come to our rescue, they muck it up. They muck this one up real good. And so there are people who want to eat gluten-free because they have celiac disease or they believe they have a sensitivity to the gluten protein. And so they turn to gluten-free foods. Unfortunately, food manufacturers, many of them, have turned to one or a combination of four ingredients: cornstarch, rice flour, tapioca starch, and potato starch, because they act and taste more or less like wheat. Well, when you dry and pulverize those specific starches, they raise blood sugar sky high. There are very few foods that raise blood sugar higher than whole wheat, for instance. Among the very few are cornstarch, rice flour, tapioca starch, and potato starch. And they're sky high, Lucian. The blood sugars go sky high. Now, those high blood sugars are not benign. They cause insulin resistance, growth of visceral fat. It's highly inflammatory. It provokes the process of glycation, or the glucose modification of proteins, that is irreversible. So if I glycate, for instance, the proteins in the lenses of my eyes from a high blood sugar after a multigrain bagel, I get opacities. I get cataracts over time. If I glycate the proteins in my cartilage, in my hips and knees, I get brittle cartilage that erodes and leads to arthritis. So many phenomena in health and aging are due to glycation. And when you eat gluten-free foods made with what I call junk carbohydrates, you get sky-high blood sugar, you get accelerated glycation. So people who consume gluten-free foods, for instance, will have very high levels of hemoglobin A1C. That's a blood test that reflects high blood sugars, and it's very common for slender people with eating gluten-free foods that have very high hemoglobin A1Cs because they've been eating this awful stuff called gluten-free processed foods.
Okay, fantastic. And Dr. Davis, one of the things in the book that really blew me away, something that hadn't even occurred to me before I even picked up the book, was the link between eating wheat and cardiovascular disease. And if you had asked me before I read the book, could there be any link, I would certainly have guessed that, you know, there wouldn't be any direct link, maybe some indirect link, but certainly no direct correlation between the consumption of wheat and heart disease. It's not what anyone sort of thinks about. People think about, you know, saturated fat, and people think about overeating and maybe even like a very sugary diet, but not a wheat diet. So can you talk about the connection between wheat and cardiovascular disease?
Sure. You know, after all, this is how I stumbled on this. I was trying to help people have better control over cardiovascular risk and stop or reverse coronary atherosclerosis, coronary artery disease. That's how this all got started. I did this because I wanted a tool to help people reduce blood sugar. And I noticed back then that the glycemic index, how high blood sugar goes after various foods, the glycemic index of whole wheat was among the highest of all foods. That's when I asked to remove all wheat from their diet in an effort to reduce blood sugar. But I saw all these other things happen. That's when they came back in 3, 4, 6 months to tell me that they lost 38 pounds, 3 inches from their waist, and their blood sugar did indeed drop. But why is my rheumatoid arthritis now gone? Why is my asthma gone? Why is my depression gone? Why am I no longer hungry? Why did that funny rash I had for 18 years just completely disappear? And that's when I started asking, why did this happen? But among the things that I saw over and over and over again, consistent with the data from University of California, Berkeley, data from University of Connecticut and other centers, is that when you remove wheat from the diet, the very, very common abnormality, an excess of small LDL particles, the most common abnormality in people with heart disease, drops to the floor. So someone comes in, let's say, with coronary disease, and they have a starting small LDL number of 1,800 nanomoles per liter. They take wheat out of the diet, it drops to 100, 0, 200. Very commonly. In other words, you didn't get a modest improvement. You got dramatic improvement. And along with that, you have a dramatic rise in HDL, HDL cholesterol. You have a dramatic reduction in triglycerides. You have a drop in VLDL particles, another kind of particle that causes heart disease. You have a drop in C-reactive protein, typically to zero. Blood sugar drops. Hemoglobin A1C drops. Blood pressure drops. Diabetics often become non-diabetic. Pre-diabetics become non-pre-diabetic. In other words, you have this broad front of metabolic changes that occur with wheat elimination that all add up to dramatic reductions in cardiovascular risk. So we actually became very good at reversing, not just controlling or stopping, but reversing coronary atherosclerosis.
So the wheat consumption is contributing to those small, highly oxidative particles, even though most doctors are still using sort of the cholesterol test as a precursor to heart disease. The creation of these small LDL particles is definitely much more of an accurate way to assess coronary heart disease.
Absolutely. One of the tripping points in this is people often don't have access to these sorts of advanced lipoprotein tests where you see such things as the excess of small LDL particles. Because most of my colleagues, as you know, do cholesterol testing or lipid testing, what I call 1963 technology. So unfortunately, if your listeners only have access to cholesterol testing or lipid testing, they still will see the rise in HDL cholesterol. That they can see. They'll still see the reductions in triglycerides. But the LDL cholesterol is very misleading because that a lot of people don't realize that LDL cholesterol you're given by your doctor and is the focus of treatment and prescribing $23 billion a year in statin drugs, that LDL cholesterol is a fictitious number. It's not a real number. It's a calculated value from an old equation developed in the 1960s by Dr. William Friedewald. So it's called the Friedewald calculated LDL cholesterol. Well, the problem is the calculation is very crude. It's built on several basic assumptions. One of the assumptions built into the equation is that everybody eats lots of grains and carbohydrates. that yields a very, very constant structure in the lipoproteins, quantity of triglycerides. Well, that's not true. Particularly when you try this kind of a diet, when you cut your grains and carbohydrates, for instance, you reduce the triglyceride content of lipoproteins. The LDL cholesterol calculation is no longer valid. It is invalid. So the LDL cholesterol value, this fictitious number based on flawed and now invalid assumptions, can do anything. It can go up, it can go down, but it's meaningless because it's not a real number. And so it has to be measured. And so that's why I advocate people getting the real test. Astoundingly, people go to their doctors sometimes, and the doctor says, well, insurance doesn't cover it. It does cover it. I've been doing it for 20 years. More likely, they don't understand it because, as you know, I'm a harsh critic of my own colleagues in that too much of their education came from that nice, good-looking sales rep in their waiting room rather than true study of the scientific literature and science behind this stuff. When you look at the science, you realize cut your fat and reduce your LDL cholesterol with statin drugs is an absurd proposition. It has almost no basis in real science. The real cause of coronary disease, there's a long list of causes, but with regards to lipoproteins and lipids and cholesterol, the real cause is an excess of oxidation-prone small LDL particles. Only three things, Lucian, in the diet cause formation of small LDL particles. Grains, sugars, and starchy legumes.
That's a great tidbit of information to have, especially when you walk into your doctor's office who want to give you those tests. And there's another group of people that I really like to help in this interview, and that's the people with a diabetes diagnosis. And one of the first things that they do when they give you a diabetes diagnosis is put you on an ADA, American Diabetes Association diet. You talk a little bit about this in your book. And this is a scenario where the diet advice and the diet that you're put on isn't just unhelpful, it is actually harmful, and it's actually increasing the odds of you getting diabetes if you don't have it. And if you have it, it's pushing you towards insulin injections and medications.
Well said, Lucian. It is a complete disaster because it is based on the same old principles. Cut your fat and saturated fat, and base your diet on healthy whole grains. That is, foods that have among the highest of glycemic indexes of all foods, and thereby raise blood sugar sky high. What they do in the ADA diet is encourage a constant intake of carbohydrates. 45 to 60 grams per meal is typical. So we're talking about 150, 250 grams carbohydrate per day. This is the diet that causes diabetes in non-diabetics or worsens it in existing diabetics. Now, they ignore the evidence that you can reduce blood sugar, hemoglobin A1C, and even get rid of diabetes by eliminating grains and other carbohydrates. Eric Westman's study, for instance, at Duke University, he took well-established diabetics, and these were people who had diabetes for years, on insulin and several drugs, cut carbohydrate intake, cut out all grains and sugars down to 20 grams per day, which is almost nothing. After 6 months, only 6 months, 25% of these long-standing diabetics were no longer diabetic. And there are other studies with similar sorts of results. So while the American Diabetes Association purports to be on the side of diabetics, they are in effect contributing to the widespread increase in diabetes in this world. Diabetics know that if they consume the American Diabetes Association diet, they will have a sky-high blood sugar. And by the way, if anybody wants to know what different foods do to blood sugar, you can prove it to yourself. If you get an inexpensive finger stick, a blood sugar meter, you can buy it from Walgreens, Walmart, for about $20 with the test strips. Some of the primary care docs even give them away for free because they make their money on the test strips. You can check a blood sugar just prior to a meal or food in question, and then 1 hour later, not 2 hours later, like the primary care people advise, because they're looking for adequacy of control of blood sugar on drugs. We're looking at how high does blood sugar go after different foods. So you check your blood sugar at the approximate peak, which is about 1 hour. And you'll see that if your blood sugar starts in the normal range, say 90, and you have two slices of whole wheat bread, it goes to about 160, 180. So you can assess yourself the effects of different foods. If you were to have a meal advocated as healthy because it's low in fat and rich in healthy whole grains, advocated by the American Diabetes Association, you'll see a typical blood sugar is 90 to about 180 to 250 in non-diabetic people. So it makes you diabetic. And if you have diabetes, that same meal will send their blood sugar, say, from 100, let's say 120 to 250. 300 is not uncommon. Astounding, horrifying high blood sugars from the, you know, I have patients who were former diabetics. They become non-diabetic, fasting blood sugars below 90. Hemoglobin A1C is a 5.0% or less in the normal, truly normal ideal range. And they get hospitalized for one reason or another. And somebody puts them, not me, somebody puts them on an ADA diet, an American Diabetes Association diet. Next thing you know, they got diabetes in the hospital and they're getting insulin. So it can happen that fast. So the American Diabetes Association is very, very quietly, by the way, backpedaling. But they're doing in teensy-weensy baby steps because no agency wants to incur the liability of saying, you know what? We were wrong. Not only did we give you a bad diet, it actually made the disease we've been charged with correcting worse. And we've contributed to the national epidemic of overweight and obesity. So we'll never hear that from the American Diabetes Association, USDA, or other agencies because for all those reasons. So what we're going to see over time is a very, very slow ratcheting back of their advice. It was only about 3 years ago, Lucian, when the website for the American Diabetes Association had a frequently asked questions to their dietitians. And this is almost, best I remember, a verbatim quote. Question. I have diabetes. Can I eat cake, cookies, and candy? Answer from the American Diabetes Association dietitians. Of course you can. Those are sources of sugar. Sugar is natural. And it's fine to have sugar. But just be sure to count your carbohydrates and adjust your dose of insulin and or talk to your doctor about adjusting your diabetes medication.
Jeez.
It's no longer on their website, but that was on there just about 3 years ago.
So if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. William Davis, the author of Wheat Belly. And Dr. Davis is going to be joining us for our upcoming Longevity Now conference that takes place Friday, February 7th to Sunday, February 9th. We're at a new location in Orange County. We're at the Hyatt Regency in Orange County, California. That's February 7th to February 9th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We've got an incredible lineup of speakers, including Dr. Joseph Mercola, Dr. Aubrey DeGray, Dave Asprey, of course, David Wolf, and here with us now, Dr. William Davis, who's going to be talking about some of the concepts in his book, Wheat Belly, as well as some other concepts. So you can join us for that event by clicking on the link below, picking up your ticket. This is an incredible opportunity to watch presenters from every different field of health, nutrition, longevity. It's an extraordinary event with well over 1,000 people in attendance. So there are still tickets available, so mark it on your calendar. And Dr. Davis, before we wrap up this interview, I'd like to move it in the direction of solution, and that is, you know, if we're getting off of wheat, which is such a staple food for so many people, in your practice, what's your recommendations for people? Do you just encourage a wide variety of healthy whole foods? What's your sort of approach to getting people wheat free and on a diet that they love?
Yeah, there really are lots and lots of food left, Lucian. People have forgotten because they may have turned to wheat because of the addictive appetite provoking effect, and because it is convenient. And you know what? I hate to admit this. It is tasty. You know, cake does taste good and bagels are fun and portable. But when you remove wheat, it's a two-part process. We remove obvious sources. Those are easy. Breads, pasta, rolls, pizza crust. Those are obvious. But there's lots and lots of not so obvious sources like Twizzlers, wheat's second ingredient, and taco seasoning, and all frozen dinners, and virtually all breakfast cereals, salad dressings. In fact, your listeners will find that virtually every processed food contains wheat in some form. Now, by the way, I don't know why that is. I suspect it's because smart food scientists figured this out way before I did, and they said, let's not talk about this. Let's put wheat in everything because it stimulates appetite and thereby stimulates sales. So if you want to go wheat free, you eliminate the obvious sources, but you also eliminate processed foods. So it's a return to real single-ingredient foods that we know are safe. Cucumbers and green peppers and other vegetables, and nuts and seeds like almonds and walnuts and pecans and macadamias. Mushrooms, avocados, coconut. There's lots of foods. Now, I should point out, because people say, oh, my God, I can't do this. I'm going to be missing so many different things. Well, you can. You can still have pancakes, cookies, muffins, cheesecake. You can have all those things. But we're going to recreate them. We're going to recreate them without wheat, without other grains, without added sugar, and without those silly junk carbohydrates chosen by the gluten-free industry. We're going to choose healthy ingredients. And now, for the time being, we have to make these things ourselves because this message has only been around for about 2.5 years, and only now are food manufacturers recognizing there's an opportunity here, and they will step up to meet market demand for these sorts of products. But right now, that's just getting started. So right now, if you and I want pizza, we've got to make our own pizza crust. And it's delicious, by the way. We've got to make our own donuts and our own muffins and scones. But you can make very delicious food. You can have rich entertainment, entertaining dinners and events with your friends. You can have wonderful holidays filled with biscuits and gravy and pumpkin pie and all those goodies. But we recreate them so they're actually healthy for you.
I would really encourage people to go over to the WheatBellyCookbook.com website, or you could go to WheatBellyBook.com. That'll get you over there as well. And that cookbook has a phenomenal list of recipes on how to make all your favorite things like muffins and cookies and all that, but without the wheat. And Dr. Davis, are there any final words you'd like to leave with our listeners? Any parting words of advice?
Yeah, one last comment. And that is because your focus is youth preservation and anti-aging. This is very relevant to that conversation. You know, a very common observation among people who do this, who follow this advice to eliminate all wheat and not replace lost calories with other silly foods or junk. People say, you know what? I feel 20 years younger. And you know what? They look 20 years younger, too. So much so that when I post before and after pictures that people provide me, and I do this virtually every day, some critics will say, hey, he found two people who look nearly identical, but are 50 pounds different. Well, I'd be an awfully clever, busy guy if I did that every day. They are more slender, yes, but they look so much more healthy, vibrant, and alive. They lose the seborrhea around their face, the redness. They lose the puffiness around the eyes. They have more spring in their step, the more limber. They have less joint stiffness and muscle aching. People look and feel so much younger. So it's among the most astounding and wonderful side benefits of this wheat-free lifestyle is this wonderful restoration of youthfulness.
All right, this has been Dr. William Davis, author of Wheat Belly, Lose the Wheat, Lose the Weight, and Find a Path Back to Health, speaking to us in preparation for the upcoming Longevity Now conference, where he'll be speaking. And that event takes place in 2014, coming up in a few months, February 7th to February 9th. That's Friday, February 7th to Sunday, February 9th. And this is going to be an outstanding event hosted by David Wolf. Many of you who have been to our events know how amazing these events are and the transformative power of these live events. So pick up your tickets now, click on the link below, and we hope to see you there. And Dr. Davis, it was a real honor speaking with you, and I look forward to meeting you in person.
Thank you, Lucian. Same here.